Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast, episode 206, as we head into the craziness of summer.
Yes. Right now, even as we speak, in the room that we're recording this in, the AC is not quite doing enough to keep up with the heat coming in through the window.
I was thinking more of the craziness of how much work we have to do in the summer. Like, even in this room, we are looking at, I think, about 600 or 700 pounds of comics that are going to be given away free in a couple of weeks.
Yep. And like our next three Saturdays or whatever are
we
all
have
taken.
Events, yeah.
Is it all three? Is like Free RPG Day or is that?
No. There's a little break before Free RPG Day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I believe there may be a month and a half. So. So we'll jump right into store news. We've got reminder: D&D Adventurers League every Tuesday and Thursday. Probably worth mentioning. We also do HeroClix on Mondays and Magic on Fridays.
Yes.
And board games any other time after that. You know, as long as the tables aren't taken.
Mm-hmm.
International Tabletop Day is this Saturday, April 28th. And as I don't believe I've run across it on, run around on the podcast yet, I guess it's probably worth mentioning, we have a schedule and everything. So, starting about 1 o'clock, we're running games. We will have some promo stuff to give away. Some of it for the games we're running, some of it for other games. But, so, starting at 1 to 3, we'll be running the Munchkin CCG. Steve Jackson will have someone on site to demo that.
Yep. Then that's... That did very well for us overall. Like, the boosters on that sold out very quickly.
Yeah. And Dave is going to run some Star Realms and Hero Realms.
Yep. Those are super awesome games that everybody should play, and if you haven't played it, play.
And we have a limited edition Star Realms card to give out to people.
Play. Yep.
There's a Dresden Files deck building game being run by our buddy Steve. From 2 to 4, there'll be an Imperial Settlers game being run. From 3 to 5, I will be demoing Splendor and Unearthed, and Unearthed will have promo cards as well to give away. Steve will switch over to demoing Red Dragon Inn, and Dave will be demoing, in theory, Codenames and possibly the new game Decrypto, which has promos as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then from 4 to 6, there's a game called First Marshals and a game called Robinson Crusoe, and from 6 to 8, Neuroshima Hex. So, lots of gaming. We also have giveaway cards for Munchkin, King of Tokyo, Clank, Mysterium, and Unearth. There's also a sale, 10% off on all games, 15% off on all the games we're demoing. So totally come in. It's going to be a big board game day.
I have a question.
Yes.
Who's demoing Robinson Crusoe?
That is a volunteer who's doing the...
Okay. It's an awesome game, and I really like it, but I feel like it's a slightly longer game.
Yeah.
It's like a co-op game that's with so a little bit more meat to it.
Yeah.
But I do feel like... I mean, it doesn't mean it's not demoable, but it's also a tough game.
Yeah.
I would be interested to see how people do.
Yeah. And then the Friday after that, we will have Free Comic Book Day. We're giving away a lot of comics. We have a lot of comics. We're going to do our rundown of them next week. We've taken a look at some of them. We're going to take a chance, take a look at all of them and give you our rundown of what we think you should pick up.
Yep. And you better listen.
That's right.
We'll be watching on Free Comic Book Day.
And then it looks like we get most of the rest of May. We don't have anything crazy going on just yet. But Saturday, June 16th, put on your calendar for Free RPG Day. There's like a Starfinder and a Pathfinder and a bunch of other stuff.
Somebody told me today that there are rumors of, unconfirmed, what's the Terranoth?
Realms of Terranoth?
Realms of Terranoth, the popular new one based on the, what's the system? Genesis? Yeah. Don't know, but that would be cool if there was. People seem pretty hyped over that book.
Yep. All right. News. So first of all, let's talk a couple of trailers.
Yeah.
Let's talk the Venom trailer, which just came out.
Right.
Full Venom trailer.
Everybody's been talking about it. Here's the thing. I'm gonna give it a nice nudge up front.
Okay.
Better than the teaser.
Yes.
Oh well, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Venom's in it.
It had Venom in it, and it actually sort of showed a little bit of what it is, and it looked baseline competent.
Yeah, their Venom looks okay, not great.
Yeah.
But okay.
But assuming they kind of poke and prod the special effects and stuff, it could be all right.
Anything else nice you guys want to say about it before I start turning into faces?
I mean, okay. Tom Hardy doesn't look bad as Eddie Brock.
Tom Hardy looks bad as Tom Hardy, though. Compared to his other work, I know you're not a Tom Hardy fan.
No, I'm not.
What are his standout roles?
Mad Max.
Right, but what are his standout roles where he got more where he spoke?
The Inception. He right. plays sort of one of the main
I was trying to remember, does he have...
He was Bane.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of movies where he's just a dude who gets some talking time And it's like movies. A star.
He was in like Bronson.
Yeah. But there's some other ones out there.
Yeah.
Some people love him. I have determined that this movie is going to be a mixture of the Venom fiends and ladies who like Tom. What's his name?
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy. And that's going to be a weird audience.
Here's the weird thing for me. I mean, beyond just the fact that they're doing a Venom movie with Spider-Man in it. Did you guys notice in the trailer that he only, like, Venom suits up once?
Yep.
But we see a lot of, like, Venom stuff spitting out of him.
Yeah.
Because they want to see Tom Hardy's face,
uh-huh.
And he's, like, in street clothes. And I'm like, it feels like a throwback. It feels like a 20-year throwback of this is how Marvel movies used to be before we realized we could just go ahead and make Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess that there actually is a fair amount of time as Venom, or more, notably more than the trailer would suggest. But they do have to sell him in the early trailers.
I would guess there's
so
about,
it makes sense.
I would guess.
Oh yeah, yeah. For if they're going to try and broaden the audience, especially the audience of people who like or are attracted to Tom Hardy, he's got to be pretty.
I would
prominent.
Guess in an hour and 45-minute movie. I'm just guessing on that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We will see about 23 minutes of actual Venom.
My guess is it'll be 2.5 hours, but there'll be 23 minutes. This looks terrible to me. One of our buddies, I think it was Jake Eckes, one artist who's been here for all ages, he made a comment on Facebook. He was like, if this were like a Netflix B-movie, like one of their, you know, the Cloverfield movie from them, it would look fine. It looks like a sci-fi concept of a dude who gets bonded with this thing. But you put the Venom branding on it, there's expectations.
Well, right. if it premiered on Netflix tomorrow, I would probably watch it. If in theaters, I'm probably going to wait till Blu-ray.
I have no intention of seeing this movie.
I'll watch it eventually, but it's not something I'm dying to see.
I feel like Sony, I don't know what exactly Sony is hoping to get. I know what they're hoping to get. They want their own cinematic universe based on all the Spider-Man stuff, but not Spider-Man.
That is such a weird thing. Happen. Why do they not want Spider-Man involved?
Because they can't have Spider-Man, because Spider-Man's part of the deal with Marvel. They can't do their own Spider-Man movies.
Well, we know Tom Holland is actually in this at some point.
Yeah.
He said he was.
But
not as Spidey, as Peter Parker.
So that is the specific way the license breaks down, is that, like, Peter Parker could show up in these movies, but Spider-Man's not allowed to play?
I think the issue is that if Spider-Man's there, they've got to get Kevin Feige to give them okays. They have to have Marvel consult on it.
Yeah.
So if they
that seems like
their,
that could only be good
I know,
for fans.
If they only want, but they want to make their own movies. They don't want. They don't want to feel like they're... part of Marvel's agenda.
Right. Yeah, I suppose it potentially hurts their brand if people are thinking like, well, the only good Sony movies are ones where Marvel consults.
But, exactly. But I feel like
but that's true.
But here's the thing. Average moviegoer who is not plugged into it like we are
doesn't know anything
doesn't
about
know
any
the difference
of that.
Between branding of, like, they think the Venom movie is a part of Marvel.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean...
Right,
and that's the other issue I have with it. I don't want this dragging down the Marvel Cinematic Universe in any way.
But it's...
Well... Marvel Cinematic Universe is already, it's an unstoppable juggernaut. It's out there making James Cameron scared, so...
Nothing can stop the juggernaut.
So, they're gonna do alright, I think. I don't think they can be hurt too much.
By the way, we're not supposed to give any spoilers. There was actually an email from Diamond, don't give any spoilers about Free Comic Book Days. And I will not give any spoilers about the Free Comic Book Day. However, I do want to mention that in Amazing Spider-Man, there's a mention of a pop-up restaurant on the site of the X-Men's, one of the X-Men battles... called Nothing Can Stop the Juggernoodle. And I think that's fantastic. It's a ramen pop-up.
Spoilers.
Sorry.
It's pretty awesome.
Important spoilers for the Spider-Man Free Day issue. All right. Anything else to go to the Venom? The trailer?
Let's see. They, I'm going to say special effects-wise, they managed to, by showing the suit forming the teeth and the tongue sort of thing, they sort of... managed to explain that, which is otherwise a weird thing.
It doesn't have... I'll say that too. They managed to make it look like... I was like, why do you do this? He looks like Spider-Man. But they made it so he doesn't look like Spider-Man. Like, he has, like, the veiny stuff, but he doesn't have the white logo on him or anything.
It also showed that we're going to get all the other, Lasher and Toxin.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, all the people that they were
I didn't catch
bonding
that.
The symbiotes to.
I don't know about symbiotes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, that's... we're going to get Carnage out of
finally, Lasher.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because some made-up guy is apparently trying to find ways of using the symbiote to make money.
And this, did they say, this was not like something that crashed Earth, this was like some experiment?
Well, no, they said they found
some.
Okay, so yeah, probably it's like a some weird, you know, alien thing
but
that was
not,
on a meteor.
It's not as cool as Spider-Man creating a new costume and it just happened to be out of an alien life form.
That said, to play devil's advocate for Sony... If Venom comes in as his own thing, and then Eddie Brock has some kind of rivalry with Peter Parker, like he gets him fired or something like that, And then he meets Spider-Man in a Marvel movie and decides to he becomes obsessed with him and takes on the Venom-like spider costume and that kind of thing. That could work. You could actually make Venom into a Spider-Man villain.
Right. So, like, he's, like, Venom is, like, just a creepy, monstrous kind of, like, guy trying to do the right thing but kind of getting pulled in these dangerous directions until he becomes obsessive about Spider-Man.
I guess I didn't even really think about that, though. Yeah. He really can't have the outfit.
No, he can't. But the version they show us, it sort of makes sense as a non-Spider-Man. He doesn't look like Spider-Man. Mm. He looks like Venom. He looks like... As much like Venom as, you know, Grendel looked like Venom a little bit.
That's
too.
That's true.
So, I devil's advocate, I could see them actually making this work for them. It's not as good of an origin as the Secret Wars origin, of course.
I think that based on this trailer, I can see that I don't think they're going to get a blockbuster out of it. What they're going to get is a movie that enough people go to see to perhaps justify it.
Maybe.
I feel like, isn't this like the Ultimate Universe version of Venom? Wasn't that like an alien that was being manipulated?
They were trying to cure cancer and they made Venoms.
Yeah.
And that this sort of seems
like... We accidentally built a Venom. Why'd we do that?
That's right.
Oh, God!
You can't cure cancer Venom driving car. A few Venoms. All right. Let's talk about the good trailer we watched. The Hotel Artemis.
Yeah, it's a movie I did not know anything about until this trailer.
Not until this.
And it's John Wick-esque. It's about sort of a hospital hotel for criminals.
Yeah, it also reminded me a little bit of, what was the movie, Red?
Yeah, a little bit. It's run by, Jodie Foster?
Yep, Jodie Foster.
She's like their head doctor.
Having fun putting in a, what kind of accent did she have? It wasn't like a Brooklyn accent, but it was kind of a little bit something like that.
And then Dave Bautista's like her head of security, or like their orderly.
Orderly.
And they take crooks in there, and they take a crook who is somehow pissed off a mob boss played by Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
And then it becomes sort of a diehard situation where they got to defend the hospital against the big crook.
Yeah, they're big, dark, dank, kind of labyrinthine-looking weird... future hospital.
Yeah.
Because what is it supposed to be? Year 2028.
It is near future, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's got great people like Charlie Day and Sterling Gates. Yeah. And,
it looks like everybody is kind of going to be chewing up the scenery.
And I have
this feeling that the same way it looked like people in Red were having fun, like who was that, Helen Mirren and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Jodie Foster looks like she's having fun being kind of doing a lighter movie like this.
It's a fun trailer. I kind of want
to
see this.
A part of me kind of compares it to like John Carpenter's Escape from New York a little bit.
Yeah,
kind of got that.
Or
feel.
I'm going to say it's The Raid in a criminal hospital in the future.
Yeah, which might have been exactly how it was pitched.
That's
Jeff Goldblum's attached and like sold.
Sold. Yeah.
All right. Why the Last Man has got an official pilot order at FX.
Yay,
which
this
is
makes
pretty
me
notable.
Happy.
Yeah, that's where I want it. Actually, I wanted HBO, but
HBO, but FX is a good solid.
So Ada Mishaka Kroll from Jessica Jones and Turn, Washington Spies, is running alongside Melina Matsoukas, who is doing Insecure, Master of None, and Beyonce Formation. That is a weird fit.
It is. But it could work.
Yeah, at this point, I don't necessarily, you know, with Jordan Peele having directed one of the best horror movies of the last few years, and I'm used to, and who was it? The guy who made the Spider-Man movie was like a nobody too, right?
Oh, yeah, he did Cop Car.
Yeah.
That was the
Cop
only
Car.
I'll say this. I think it's notable that the both showrunners are women.
Yep.
I think that's important for Why Last Man, because Why Last Man has occasionally gotten tagged from some people. I know like Felicia Day and a couple others who found its feminist message like off. They're like it's sort of they found it a misogynist book.
Right. Like this book that is meant to explore sort of gender politics through this apocalyptic type future, I think sometimes came off as mansplaining.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, because Brian Vaughn, as much as he, you know, seems to be a very progressive guy, is a dude, and he's interpreting stuff.
Also, they've mentioned one of the co-showrunners mentioned that basically they had to put this on hold after Trump was elected president and sort of start to rethink it because there's been some pretty notable changes. You know, the salary parity debates, Me Too, Time's Up, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff that's going to inform a new why.
Totally.
And I think that's interesting because Runaways on Hulu was the same thing. It was like it was made at a certain time, and it had to be pretty notably changed. And
what
a lot of fans
change
like
about
change.
Runaways. What wouldn't work?
I don't know. It had been some of the youth culture moves forward at a rate.
Totally.
I think that was the thing. It's like things had changed in 20 years.
Yep. Yeah.
And so I think that
Well, I just this is a small, this is a completely anecdotal, but the way Runaways, the comic opened, was people, the kids were all playing an MMO for superheroes.
Yeah.
And yes, MMOs still exist, but they are not what they were 15
right.
years ago.
Right. Well, another example is that, cell phones have gotten even more ubiquitous, smartphones, all that kind of stuff. And also, Vaughn's stuff is always laden with pop culture references. And
right.
Runaways particularly was, which meant you had to update a lot of that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's interesting. I'm hoping that this will go well. FX is a pretty solid track record.
Well, and a lot of people deem that Jessica Jones is one of the best Marvel Netflix series.
I agree.
Series,
I haven't seen season 2 yet, but I would agree with that.
Yeah.
All right. Netflix has ordered straight to series a Fast and the Furious animated series, and I cannot be more excited.
No, this sounds amazing.
You know what this sounds to me like?
What's that?
It's a way for them to make the movie without... Vin Diesel,
Rock,
and
then
Vin, whoever's feuding this week.
Yeah.
I am, and I'm not happy. I feel like some part of what makes those movies fun is their kind of grounding in at least some basic visual reality,
yeah.
which animation might not work for, but it could work great for.
You mean the visual reality of a car crashing between one skyscraper into another skyscraper?
Correct.
The reality of a bunch of cars falling out of a plane?
In anime, that's prosaic. If you make it look like it's happening in live action, it's startlingly fun.
That's interesting. I can see that.
I
feel like this series, Fast and the Furious, is already so out there.
Right.
That
it's basically an anime.
And also I feel like anime will allow them to free up to do some things that would be much harder to do in stunts.
Sure.
Which means if they push things even further because they don't have to worry about live action actors,
yeah.
I think we could get something really, really great.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, by the way? Like, this might mess with fans too much, but like, are we gonna see Paul Walker?
No, I think this is about, like, Dom's cousin or something.
Oh, is it? It's not
I heard a rumor.
Oh, okay. I didn't know quite who they were going to focus on or if they were going to get any of, like, the cast members to do voices.
Well, they could do, like, Mr. Nobody and some of those people presumably still in there.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to give it a grounding.
Because
I want characters I care about.
Yeah,
and, like, if it's just some nobody who is tangentially linked, that might not be enough. Yeah. one thing I was thinking is, like, if in an ideal world, this would work as well as something like what I still consider the Animatrix, one of those high points of taking a movie and doing an anime tied to it. They've done it with other stuff, and I don't know if I've ever seen it as successful as that.
Yeah.
That just, like, completely supported the theme. Like, they had a bunch of different styles and a bunch of different episodes and stuff like that, but they were all kind of about this weird, that blurring of reality.
I'm not 100% sold a Fast and Furious anime is going to fit it into what you're...
Well, no, it won't be doing that,
but
what
that
I needed to...
Goal.
I needed to fit the theme of Fast and Furious. I need them to get what that makes those movies fun.
I hope it's about family in some way.
And if it's not, it's not Fast and Furious.
I wanted to look just like that Funny or Die skit about how the realistic the stunt should be in Fast and Furious. I don't know.
Need it to have cars drag racing with a chick in the foreground wearing a thong, dropping the flag.
I think it's
I don't understand how it could be
actually
Fast and Furious without
that. Actually, what I want is just a good opening scene. You know, the Men in Black cartoon had that great opening sequence.
Which one?
Men in Black cartoon has that great opening sequence.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I want an opening sequence like that for us. Something that's like, it's got to have the butts and the street racing and the family. Like, it should be an amazing, like, if they animated segments of the movie and of the various movies and did an opening like they did for, I think, Fast 6 or 7.
I think at the end of the credits you open some Coronas.
Yeah. And then the NOS flows through, or is that just for, that's just for one? Yeah. No, I would love a good opening.
Give it a good kind of hip-hop soundtrack
and
everything, yeah.
I can see this going very, very right. I can also see it going very, very wrong.
Yeah. But Netflix has an all right track record.
They do.
We were talking about this earlier that their Vampire Hunter D original thing was pretty good. I've heard more good than bad things about their various animation new anime.
Death Metal Panda thing that's out right now.
Yep. But
and the Godzilla one went over well, I think.
Yeah, that's true. And at some point they have, I believe, there's supposed to be a CG Watership Down that had John Boyega as one of the voices in there. It must just be either it's taking longer than they thought or they're about to spring
Netflix,
it next week.
I think
and we
Netflix
won't know.
List of things that they've got in the frying pan and the cooker is about like 3 or 4 miles long.
I feel like this Netflix thing might just work out for them.
Yes.
I will say, you mentioned John Boyega. it's kind of where they have no, like, Pacific Rim animated series. Like, that seems tailor-made for it.
Yeah. Totally. Well, give it, like, 5 years, and then I'll probably come back as one.
All right. There is... This is just a weird story. Actress and singer Nina Bergman. Don't know who that is. You?
I don't know. It doesn't ring...
None of us know who she is.
Right.
She was, like, tweeting about how she's going to be in the new Doom from Universal, which sounds like it might be direct-to-DVD or direct-to-video...
Doom the video game.
Doom the video game is getting a new movie from Universal.
Well, you know that it did originally have a movie, and it had
The Rock.
It was The Rock.
Yeah.
Back in like the early...
Yeah, and it was a video game movie, which means it was terrible.
Yeah, it was really bad. Why they think they can resurrect it as something?
But now The Rock has been in the best video game movie ever, which is, I believe, Rampage.
Yes.
Sits at like
50... Allegedly.
It sits at like 53% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is the highest of any video game movie by
quite feel like number. Mortal Kombat deserves at least... 59% to 60%.
I concur. But nobody asked us, Dave.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have no opinion on your Doom movie. No, I don't care.
Well, here's the thing. I guess I loved Doom circa, I'm going to say like 19, what was it, 94?
Yeah.
95?
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
I played a lot of Doom.
I played a lot of Doom too. I played Doom 2. Almost any Doom game past those original ones with their, you know, they had like fake sort of 3D. It still had like bitmapped graphics on like, so there were sprite graphics, but on some 3D forms, I think. And it was like 2.5D where like, if you moved to another level, took an elevator up or down, it was actually like just creating a new level. It was not literally moving you up in space. They had all these kind of weird things. But as soon as the game kind of became fancy and advanced, it was no good anymore.
It kind of lost something.
It was kind of funnest when, I mean, it was a time when first-person shooters were just nothing but blasting things. There was not really much story, you know, there was, like, hidden things, and they still had some more video game-ishness, almost that 80s video game with just hidden items everywhere and health packs and all
honestly,
that.
And this sounds bad. I don't even remember what the story of Doom was. I just remember you were a guy.
Demons from Hell, right?
I believe they were like, I think they were on Mars, and there was like a station, and they accidentally opened like a portal to hell. Like, it's basically a good idea. People running around shooting demons that escaped into a high-tech base.
Sure.
And just for clarification, I looked up Mortal Kombat and Rotten Tomatoes. It sits at a measly 34%.
Incorrect.
I mean, I agree with you. I think it's one of the best.
Soundtrack alone is worth 40%.
Yeah, the soundtrack alone is 40%.
Here's the weird thing. Especially given the time we live in right now. If you're going to do an adaptation of an old-school first-person shooter, why not make a Castle Wolfenstein with undead Nazis?
Yeah.
Like, why not make that movie?
People like Nazis being punched and shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Based on the trailer, though, I could be more interested in a Doom remake than a Venom movie. So
you know what I think that would actually be fun would be to do it with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
The last... I tried to play one of the Doom games that was one of the... It was like... was it just Doom 3 or whatever? It was the one where they got into serious 3D, was probably using the Unreal Engine and stuff like that. And it was so serious, and they were trying to, like, they had made it spooky and stuff like that. And I was like, Doom is all about just nonstop shooting and just meathead blasting away.
This is the originator of the BFG.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
On.
Exactly.
Yep.
It had those little, those floating beholder things that I would go and I would get right in their face with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
That has to be what it... I mean, it has to be like the kind of the same thing that goes into...
And you have to make some reference to the god code, the IFDDJ code. I can't remember exactly what it was.
What was... movies like Shoot 'Em Up and like Crank and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous action movies.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like it needed to
be. Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, they didn't consult me.
Anyway, well, who knows what they're going to do.
Yeah, that's true.
But probably not that.
Probably not that.
All right. John Ridley, Oscar winner, and I believe, you know, TV...
soon to do his own DC comic about the secret history.
He's going to write and direct an adaptation of the DC comic series The American Way, Those Above and Below, which is a sequel to his American Way series from 2006 from Wildstorm. I've never read either one. I think I read the first issue of American Way, didn't do anything for me. But apparently the original takes place in 1962. The sequel, which is what they're adapting, it takes place a decade later when the superheroes have fallen from public favor, and most of them retired, and then one hero named the New American operates in the open. So it's a criticism of superheroes. It sounds like maybe Watchmen-esque, but I don't know anything about it.
Is there a race relations thing in this too?
I'm pretty sure there is. Now, this is Blumhouse is doing it. It's being produced by Jason Blum. who also produced Truth or Dare, which just came out, and Get Out.
Okay. Truth or Dare, which I heard got terrible ratings. Get Out, which won an Academy Award.
Yep.
So who knows what'll happen, but generally Blumhouse seems to...
It will either be very good or really bad.
Well, they make a lot of also just rock-solid movies. The various Insidious movies and all of that stuff. So yeah, who knows? But yeah, sometimes where does this guy where does he come from? Hollywood? Is he
John Ridley? Yeah, John Ridley. Did 13 Years a Slave.
13 Years a Slave, right?
And then
right.
He did American Crime. Is that
American
right?
Crime?
One thing we've noticed is the guys who kind of come into comics from other media, like film or novels. And they sort of think that they're the first one to ever have an idea about what would it be like if the government had to have oversight over superheroes, or
right.
What would it be like if a superhero got old and felt bad about it?
Well, it's weird.
We did all this in the 80s.
I know Ridley's like a big superhero fan.
Yeah.
You know, he...
But your thing about like all the superheroes being outlawed and like Superman coming out of retirement, I'm like, there's all these shades of Dark Knight and all this other stuff that I'm... Or Watchmen, and like it's... I know that he is going to... I know that he takes it to different places, but the bare bones are a little familiar.
I'll say this. John Ridley's been in our store.
It's true. He has. You saying he's in there right now
he
in the ceilings?
Right. No, he filmed a scene for American Crime in our store.
Yeah, he did.
That's right.
Store.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. So, we were in about 2 seconds of American Crime Season 2. All right. Finally, a little bit of gaming news. Vampire the Masquerade is coming back. People have been asking for this game forever, and apparently there's been, like, a digital version that's been around for all this stuff.
Like PDF, yeah. They had, like, a print-on-demand or
But they're calling this version 5. It's come from Modifus, the guys who did the Star Trek RPG, which seems to have done pretty well.
That's been... it has been gone for, like, from our shelves, at least, for, like, what, 10 years?
Yeah.
It's, like, a long time.
Longer than that. It's been a long time.
The last thing I remember that they notably were producing was, like, Exalted... those guys, but
even that was Dragon's Lair. That was before we were Rogue. So I mean, it's been like 12 or 13 years.
Yeah. I actually so here's a quick poll. Anybody here ever play any White Wolf games at all?
I played a little bit of Vampire, and I owned Werewolf and Mage.
Okay. The answer for me is no. I did not.
Did not either.
I played a session or two of Vampire. It is not my type of gaming. It is definitely more for people who are a little gothy, a little like the live action stuff a little bit more, like to really get into their characters, like to sort of examine darkness. It's not my style of gaming.
Yeah.
But for those who are, there's been not much for them. Like there's the indie RPGs, but I think those are a little too indie.
Yeah.
I think that this will bring in people who maybe have been out of gaming for a while. Also, they say that they're going to talk about the terrors of the Second Inquisition, conspiracies behind the Kahana War, and the rekindling of the War of Ages. So
they're moving the forward,
moving the timeline forward.
That's good. I know that the way they, you know, there was like they did sort of bring the World of Darkness stuff to at one point to a close.
Yeah.
With like you know storylines that would cross over between all of them,
and nobody liked that.
And nobody liked it. Actually, there, I think there were some people who thought there was some interesting stuff, but almost nobody was like it was exactly what they wanted.
I believe it had the same effect on the vampire stuff as D&D 4th Edition had on D&D, and it nearly killed it.
Right. One thing that everybody has always told me is their backstories and stuff in it.
Yeah.
You know, their history that they created for this game is really detailed and super fascinating, and I do believe that. What little I've read about it sounded pretty interesting. Yeah, like you, I don't know if I would particularly ever want to play it. I'm a role player type person, but I don't know if I wanted to get into gothic politics of vampires and things like that with rival clans.
The idea of it always sounded cool. The notion of sort of these conspiracy of vampires underneath our world and that kind of thing. But it's not for me. But
I guess ultimately I want to play some dude who's a hero.
Yeah, I'm excited about it because I think. I think there's a segment of the market that's been left out. I'm excited for what it means for our store.
Yeah, well, you know, we've known over the years that as D&D goes, so goes the industry to a large extent.
Yep.
And so D&D is as on the rise as I've ever seen it. And I would love if it was able to, like, Shadowrun's been doing pretty well. I don't think it's particularly drafting off of D&D, but it's doing well. And I would love it if a few others managed to come in here and if people who got into the hobby through D&D, which is a lot of kids these days... got interested in some of this stuff. I'd love for a new generation to find Vampire.
Also, it's time to bring back Boot Hill.
And Gangbusters.
All right, we'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. One familiar cry. Rogue Cast. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, April 28th, and, We close out. We're going to start with a book that we all liked.
This barely happens.
We all pick.
Yeah.
And that is The Hunt for Wolverine, number one. I'll let you guys take a lead on this because I never read Death of Wolverine, which you guys love.
Well, yeah, it's crazy that you didn't read that, by the way.
I know. I need to.
I kind of want to say something about before we get into this, because this was all on our radar, but I don't think any of us were particularly super excited to.
It wasn't on my radar.
Well, I mean, I guess it was on my radar. And
like, I knew it existed.
Randy and I had ordered it,
yeah.
So I knew it was coming, but I didn't know quite what to expect.
Yes.
But this is written by Charles Soule, who did write The Death of Wolverine.
Yep. Right, which I really liked.
Yeah, and this that is like, was great.
And basically, it seems like this is sort of like a giant-sized special that leads into to several different miniseries, in some ways, in the same way that Death of Wolverine
spun off into
several other
ones. By the way, there's two artists on here. David Marquez is the beginning, and he's working in a very Mike Deodato style, I would say, of this one.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's fantastic. And then Paulo Sequeira does the second half, and that's also really good. So it's got good art, too.
Yep.
Yes, it does.
So what were you saying, though, Nick?
No, I just didn't quite know what to expect from this, and I didn't quite know it was going to be sort of not an epilogue to Death of Wolverine, but it's very much
it is. It is.
But you know what's funny is, like, in some ways, we've already seen Wolverine back. Like, they're doing those coy teasers, but that one Infinity Wars or Infinity Countdown special they did straight up showed him moving around using the Infinity Gem to teleport.
Yep.
So we know he's back. And I was like, well, this is kind of a weird timeline, but now I guess that they're going to have this sort of mystery about his return.
Yeah, we don't know how or why.
And I was like, that seems backwards to me. But then I read this, and it was super good, and then now I'm on board.
Yeah.
Well, it starts out with a bunch of characters I don't care about who were used so well that I cared about them.
Well, it starts out with a giant blurb on the first page of, like, what's been going on, and, like, Wolverine died entombed in molten adamantium. The X-Men, like, took his body to a secret place, but nothing stays buried.
Right.
It's very kind of, like, Star Wars-esque with its crazy crawl.
Right, kind of a dramatic little opening text piece. And then it opens with, yes, there is indeed, do we want to say who?
Yeah,
that's on the first page. It's the Reavers, who, by the way, I have an opposite reaction to Dave, which is, I always like the Reavers. I have a fondness built up to them. I'm always talking about the cyborg with the tank treads. That dude's in here, all he's got new, like, spidery legs.
I was always creeped.
He got mecha.
I was always creeped out by them. I mean, I love them as X-Men villains, but they're, like, the nastiest of nasty.
And they're... Well,
so let's say how they made them cool.
So they're, they're sort of mercenaries, they're all cyborgs, and they're sort of mutant hunters, but they've been on the outs, they clearly have not been making the last few jobs, and so, like, their parts are not working. They're having to sort of scrounge. One of them talks like how he's like, yeah, my left audio receiver is still working. And basically they're doing this one last job to kind of get replacement parts and upgrades. And that job is, hey, let's recover all the adamantium that is Wolverine's corpse, because
that'll sell for a lot of money.
And also the material within the body.
The genetic material is worth time.
And also the Reavers have a huge history with Wolverine.
Yeah,
so it's kind of a nice
Donald
little...
Pierce, who leads them, was the original... was in the Hellfire Club during the whole Dark Phoenix saga when Wolverine carved him up with his claws and he had to become cyborg.
They're all those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
They're
all the guards and stuff.
Pretty Boy.
All the cyborgs have been created
all these dudes that Wolverine clawed to pieces once upon a time.
And so, as you would expect, the X-Men show up to defend their friend's tomb.
And very coolly, I thought, although we know that the Reavers are not operating at peak capacity, they made them mean customers, and, like, they showed how they could be a real threat to the X-Men. I love it when they do villains like this. I hate when somebody shows up and says, like, the Prowler, oh, you're so Z-list, you're so below me, and I'm like, I got to have to feel like there's stakes, and they actually felt like there were some stakes here.
Yeah, there's a big reveal, which I think, I don't want to spoil, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, there's even some cool flashbacks to, like, to Wolverine's death and the immediate events afterwards, where they were, like, talking to Reed Richards and, like, other people he had approached about losing his healing factor.
And there's a notable thing in that flashback, too, which I don't want to spoil, but it's a really good return of Wolverine, and then the second part is all about sort of setting up these four miniseries that are going to have people looking for him, trying to figure out what's going on, if he's alive, what's he doing, why did he contact anybody, and
when I saw the
it's a good setup.
When I saw the like first covers for the first issues of the four miniseries spinning out of this, and some of the characters on board, I was like, well, why are they there?
Yeah.
But seeing them sort of flush out why they are there and why they're contacted.
Right. Well,
I'm kind of like,
I'm not going to say who, but what do you call it? Kitty recruits a few people at the end that I thought were really interesting interesting people to recruit.
Well, yeah. I mean, Wolverine wasn't just part of the X-Men. He was a, kind of the larger part of the world, so makes sense.
Yeah, it's this was really good.
Yeah.
And I think it sets up an interesting story, so I was very surprised.
Yeah, it was one of those where, like, every few pages would be some interesting reveal or some cool fight scene or, like, a good personal moment, you know, like, well, you know, Cyclops never was had a ton of love for Wolverine. Here's some interesting thoughts on his, like, you know, during the funeral or whatever.
But it's the Cyclops I wanted, though. I mean, that's the Cyclops I want.
Also, it does what I think Guggenheim did really well, which is, and what Sewell did well on Death of Wolverine, from what I understand, which is to make nods to the history in a way that makes you like the history instead of feeling like it's just a fanboy fan service.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Like, everything in here, I was like, that's cool. That's neat.
All right. So my pick for the week is also a Wolverine book. That is All New Wolverine number 34. I already picked part one of this. This is the Old Woman Laura story. It is basically, this is a optimistic future where the superheroes have won, except that Doom has domed off Latveria. He is like the last remaining supervillain, and for important reasons, the president of Madripoor, whatever she is, the leader of Madripoor, Laura Kinney, aka Wolverine.
Yeah.
She goes in with Gabby, who has become Wolverine, and with Maria Hill, Cyborg ex Shield agent. They're going to go in and take out Doom. And there's a reason. This is like Laura's last run. It's like one last run. She's going to try and take out the last villain in the world. There are two more special guests who show up here and join the team. I was delighted. I might have internally squeed a little when I saw both of them here. And then there's an infiltration of Doom. He's got a very interesting anti-theft system, which you would expect. They definitely sort of build up that Doom is not a lightweight to have to take down. There's a great secret weapon that they throw in. This is Tom Taylor at his best. It is a great finale to One Wolverine. It's got that emotion that this book has always had. It's got the great action it's always had. And it's got really nice art by Ramon Rosanas. This is a great book. I'm going to be really sorry to see Tom Taylor leave this book, but he's leaving on a high note.
Off mic, I need to know who the guest stars are.
Yeah. Dave?
So I'm going to pick a D&D comic. I've been liking all the D&D miniseries from Jim Zub over the last few years, all of which have built focused on Minsk and Boo. Minsk, the ridiculous kind of ranger from, what do you call it? From Baldur's Gate, the game that the biggest probably of the D&D games of the 90s and still probably one of the best known ones. And he's ridiculous, but he's also very effective. If I'm not mistaken, did he actually have the 18, back in the second edition days, Randy, the 18-100 strength, you know?
I believe that's correct.
I think he was, at the peak strength.
Yep.
And he's, of course, got his miniature giant space hamster, Boo.
Yes.
And he's got a group of adventurers he's been working with over the course of these last few miniseries. This series, though, is going to focus on each of them one at a time, with him getting the focus this issue. So what's happened is they've returned to Baldur's Gate after a number of adventures, and it's almost like he's kind of looking to establish his reputation again. But everybody's like, well, I need to go resupply magic, I need to go pray at the temple, all kind of stuff that he's like, they kind of all give him the cold shoulder. He's like, I will go and I will pray at the temple with you too. And they're like, no, that's all right, it's okay. And for people, those who don't know, by the way, his characterization is a lot like the Tick as a ranger in D&D world. Yep. He is ridiculous. But in a good way. What he runs into is a guy who is a sort of vigilante, good deed doer, who he wants to basically have a Marvel team up with.
Yeah.
And again, the guy's giving him the cold shoulder, and he sees the guy in action, and the guy is kind of a badass, but there is a secret at the heart of this.
Yeah.
And I don't want to quite say what it is, but it's a cool D&D reveal, it is a very fun first issue.
it is.
I was just looking at the last page, and as his discussion, what he's telling Boo is awesome. And I'm looking forward to, because although I liked all of these, I kind of sometimes forget stuff about the other party members. Yep. So I'm looking forward to a bunch of sort of one-shot stories. I'm a big fan of the comic book one-shot.
Yeah.
I was actually just talking about this with our new staffer, Kate, last night, and say she doesn't like one single issues. You know, she's kind of coming into comics somewhat fresh.
Sure.
And she's read a lot. She's read trade paperbacks, and she really likes them. And that's almost her entry point.
Sure.
So it makes sense that, you know, she, like, reads a single issue, and a lot of times she's like, well, it's not enough material.
Yeah.
But what she's reading are things like, what she's read Saga, and so, like, yeah, a single issue of Saga would be kind of like,
yeah.
It's just a, like, one chapter in a bigger story. But the art of single issues like this one, where it's very deliberately meant to be a standalone story, is one I still love. It's not employed too often, and that's why I understand people who like trade paperbacks. But when it's done right, I really like it, and I feel like Zub is going to be doing a very good job with these issues.
Yep.
Nick, what you got?
I am picking The Mighty Thor 706, which is the finale to Jason Aaron's Jane Foster Thor. And I'm not going to get into spoilers on anything, because this is one of those books you just need to read.
I think everybody knew that her fate was approaching.
Yeah.
Jane Foster has had, what, cancer the entire time. She's been, like, undergoing leukemia, or, like, treatments, I mean, chemo and stuff like that. And has been, you know, when she was Thor, she was completely, you know, had all her strength, but her human body was wasting away.
Exactly.
And that, like, there was an end coming, and there was some way, one way or another, it was going to come to an end.
But it's a very heartfelt written story by Jason Aaron, and a lot of the Thor's characters, Thor himself,
Thor Odinson, the traditional
Odin,
one.
All of them sort of play a larger part and become sort of the more pinnacle characters that I expect from all of them. Russell Dodderman's artwork is just flat out gorgeous. Such beautiful colors.
Yeah, I would not have guessed that he would be the artist that would be so notable on Thor the last few years, because, well, he's not quite like Frank Quitely, but he's got some elements of him. And he's got, but it's a very dynamic style, but it's not the kind of style that I would normally associate with Thor. And yet, he clicked.
And the colors by Matthew Wilson. I don't talk about colorists very often, but...
Well, there's specifically something about this issue, without saying too much, I don't want to say too much, but that lets the colorist, I think, shine.
Yeah, it's beautiful, and you can really see the sort of depth that is added to Russell Dodderman's art by it. But overall, this has just been a fantastic run, and
it left you sated. It didn't drop the ball chapter and screw it up permanently.
It did not, and I feel like that Jason Aaron has told a really good Thor story and left it in such a way that he basically picks up with the next chapter.
Yeah,
because he is going to continue to write Thor. I feel like this is one of those titles that's
going
to
be out there for a decade.
You're
going to
try to pry it away from his cold dead hands, is essentially.
But if you don't like his writing, sorry, brother.
Kind of out of luck.
Well, and it's weird because he doesn't often all the time work for me on his properties. Some of it just doesn't work.
You think just Thor is like
Thor
one of those...
for some reason is one of those that he seems to click with. And
you know, like Simonson. Somewhat notably, he's probably got the most famous Thor run of them all. He doesn't have a ton of other like runs, especially where he's the writer as well, that have stood out like that.
Yeah.
You know, Thor is going to be the big one for him always, and it seems like that may be the case for Aaron as well.
Yeah, there is a epilogue issue that's coming out in a month or so that'll be sort of the capper to it. But it was a great issue. And then my backup pick is one that I've also been picking a lot lately, and it's X-Men Blue number 26, which...
Nick is always picking X-Men Blue number 26.
I've been picking X-Men Blue mainly because of they've really shuck up the status quo, kind of shunting the time to place.
There was
X-Men
a total change-up.
And now we have a new X-Men team run by Polaris, which is bizarre, and I kind of love it.
Yeah, I like Polaris. I feel like she's a character has always been one of those characters that needed some defining, but...
And then it's sort of this mishmash of random characters like Daken, which a friend of mine over the weekend reminded me that he killed the Punisher, and he will always hate him for that.
You know, I was going to say, I don't love Daken, or is it Daken? Like, I thought
Daken,
it was
Daken.
Daken is Wolverine's son. Daken is a heavy metal band.
I believe it's also the name of his son. I'm sorry.
I don't think so.
I believe so. I prefer Daken.
Or is Daken the Shiar guy and this is Daken?
That's true.
Anyway, wait a moment. Is it Daken? There's no Dakens, right?
It
Maybe
could
he's Daken.
It could be Daken.
Anyway, what I was going to say is Punisher has at times been too uber a character, and people can get a little cultish about the Punisher. So I kind of like him being killed by Wolverine's unliked son.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it produced the crazy Frankencastle story, and probably most people just kind of mentally write that out of continuity. So Punisher is, I think, ultimately safe. But I was kind of glad he got taken down a peg.
But this one also has weird story arcs involving Havoc teaming up with White Queen, teaming up with Bastion, and Bizarre.
X-Men always be teaming up with their villains.
Exactly. And this is all, like, utilizing the mutant gene from the Ultimate Universe to create something called Mother Vine that enhances mutants to have, like, secondary and tertiary mutations.
Whoa, those secondary mutations were not Grant Morrison's best idea. No. We don't want to dig that one up again.
Well, Cullen Bunn wants to, and Cullen, he is running with it.
No, I can see how you can tell the decent story with it. And if nothing else, it made Beast look like a cool Catman for a while.
Yeah, and he's using Zorn, and I'm, like, very wary of people using
I'm getting
using
a lot
Zorn.
Of warning signals off of this, Nick. Are you sure you like it?
I really, really do. I think Cullen Bunn is utilizing kind of the oddball world of the X-Men, and
I actually really like when a writer takes a character that I normally wouldn't like and does something good with him, which is why there was a random Scott Lobdell Jubilee story I once read, and I liked it. And I was like, well, I guess any character can have potential, even the despised Jubilee.
And a lot of this is also on the artist, which is Arby Silva, which I don't remember what I know him from.
I know the name, but I don't know where I know him from.
I feel
either.
Like he may have done some of that X-Men Age of X, that miniseries.
Maybe so. Yeah.
But the art here is just really, really nice. And just it's easy to read. You know what's happening. And it all just looks fun, and there's all these weird mutations that he gets to have fun with and sort of how visually striking some of them are. So I think it's a blast to read, so I'm really enjoying it. Dave, what is your backup pick? Though I know...
I bet I can guess.
I bet I can guess as well.
Well, I have a number of standards I go to.
Uh-huh.
If our listeners keep track of when release dates, then it'll be obvious. But if not, it could be one of several.
Is it Black Hammer?
See, that's one of them. What other standards do I have that I go to? There's at least one or two other ones.
Yeah,
I can't.
Why
think
am
of
I blanking
right
on
now.
This?
There's one that you've picked every single issue of. I think
it's this one. It's Kill or Be Killed, number 18. I have no apologies,
Dave. You only have two more picks of this, and then it'll go
find
away.
Book, yep.
So yeah, Nick was just telling me that they ordered the final issue of this, which is actually something I like. I like short series. It's going to end up then, I guess, at 20 issues.
20
that's
issues.
Perfect. Because this issue was so good. Like, the lead guy who's been doing his vigilante thing at the behest of a demon or possibly a hallucination for some time now, there's been some various twists and turns in the investigation to find him, Russian mob pursuit, and for the last few issues he's actually been in a like a mental institution. Because he's also, you know, he's got some issues of his own, and he's been taking, like, pills to kind of rein in his, you know, his
like
problems.
Antipsychotic type
stuff. Yeah, exactly. And meanwhile, while he's in there and was, like, trying to confess to one of the doctors, I am the vigilante, someone out there is, like, a copycat vigilante wearing the same clothes and killing people, like, with a shotgun. And that added its own wrinkle. And then, seemingly in the previous issue, that guy turns up dead. And this follows up the investigation, and it's like a... Well, as far as, like, the cops are concerned, they're like, well, case closed. They got their vigilante, and this guy is off the hook, and our hero, you know, is okay. And when I say hero, he's a disturbed young man. I love him as a protagonist, but, yeah, what he's been doing has always been weird, and he's been trying to only go after bad people, but it's got him caught up in some sketchy business.
I feel
business.
Like that's kind of a constant with Brubaker.
It is.
His main characters are never kind of... the clean and
well, you know, I'm
going to
talk about in a minute when we talk about our other books, a graphic novel of his that comes out today,
mm-hmm.
and I will say, as dark as this book, remember when we read the first issue of this and we were like, that's dark, it's messed up, and I was not sure if I was going to be able to stick with it because it was like so kind of dark. Well, I actually think overall the book does not have the kind of gloom that, that the innocents who die that Sleeper had, which is the book I'm going to mention. I accidentally blabbed it.
You blabbed it, Quaid.
You blabbed about Mars. and that some of other Brubaker's other books do. I suppose it's partially it's because mainly the toll has been on people who have been bad people. Sometimes it's a little bit gray. I don't know if anybody saw that, anybody who watched, what was that TV show, Mindhunter, the Netflix show about the FBI, the true story sort of based on, or based on the real story of the FBI guy who invented their profile division for serial killers. Well, there's that one story that, I don't remember if this is based on reality or not, where he, there's a school principal, do you remember this, who like tickles kids' feet when they're taken to him for being bad kids?
Yeah.
And the profiler guy looks into this, and it, there's a lot of disturbing behaviors in this. And some of the parents are bothered by it, but a lot of them think, well, he gets it, you know, he gets the kids like him, and, you know, it's okay because he gets results.
Just creepy.
And it is super creepy, and he goes out of his way, and the guy gets fired as a result, but his wife shows up and yells at him and, like, makes it sound like, I can't find a job now, but he was, like, you're never, like, 100% sure if the guy might have just been, like, this sort of weird, out-of-bounds dude but had no danger to him. Well, something, you know, sometimes there is that, in this story, in Killer Be Killed, he has to decide whether to kill these people, not just get them fired or something. And that has led to some morally gray issues. But overall, the series is not as morose as I thought. It's dark, but it's not morose. And this issue was a cool labyrinthine story about investigations. Who was that copycat vigilante? And also, is he really off the hook? Or did he just think he was off the hook?
Right.
Because there's somebody else who's finding some interesting leads, and things some things are happening very quickly now. So I can see how it will only have two issues left.
As you're flipping through it, I mean, Sean Phillips is doing some fantastic work.
He's killing it on the artwork and the colorist from.
Is it Elizabeth Breitweiser?
Yeah, she's great. So good. I love the color palette on this book, and yeah, and it's probably the, my favorite art that I've seen from Sean Phillips. And yeah, even though these characters, you know, the lead character is very sort of morally compromised, he's always been very watchable, and you also get a lot of the people around him at times, and they're all an interesting bunch. So this is gonna, you know, it's for sure gonna be one of my favorite series, probably that Ed Brubaker's ever done.
Dave, let me ask you: as I read this, I found it even better because I know there's two issues left.
Yeah,
like we know they're closing in on the ending.
Yes,
and I think that having, I think that
I like short, concentrated bursts of awesomeness.
Not only that, I like that they do short. I like that we never know until it's like the last minute. We don't know that we're coming up on the ending. Like, they don't say this is going to be.
You mean with
a,
Brubaker's miniseries?
Yeah, Brubaker. It's like, Brubaker always says, like, they tell us at the end. Like, they don't say this is going to be a 15 issue series, so you're not watching for the end the whole time. It's like you're reading it, it's proceeding, and you're starting to feel like they might be coming to a close. They might go another 20 issues. And then when they announce that ending, you're like, oh, I kind of see.
Yeah, the stuff that was happening suddenly feels like, you know, it carries sort of more weight.
More weight, yeah.
Do you see the conclusion coming, or do you feel like they're going to have to rush towards it?
I don't know what they're going to do.
I have this series has, with every issue, sort of defied my expectations.
Okay.
On some level, like, it's not like wild twists and turns. Like, that's not like what I would say is a defining quality. But I will say that, like, the reason I pick it every time is because every individual issue has been, like, super satisfying. I'll pick it up, and I'll start to read it, and I'll kind of maybe have some sense of where it's going, and he will find new directions that I really like. They're not like twists that feel like cheats or anything. They're just, oh, wow, I did not expect this to lead into that, and I really want to know how it's going to come out. And I feel like... What was your question, Nick?
No, I was going to ask Randy, how long did Velvet go? Was that 20 issues?
It was in that ballpark. They always go roughly the same amount of issues.
I was just going to say, they did one volume for Velvet as a hardcover. I'm like, I'll probably do one volume.
They did that for Fade Out as well. They will probably do it for this one as well.
Yeah, and Criminal, I'm trying to think, that had a bunch of different miniseries, but it was ultimately collected over, what, like two hardcovers, maybe three?
I think there was, two or three.
Yeah.
Incognito's the same way. I like the small collections. I like the small... What I'm really curious, what this always means is, what are they doing next?
Yeah.
Because he's talked about, like, a straight-up, like... he talked about sort of detective fiction was getting his initial. He might do a detective series, which would be interesting.
Can see that.
Well, the last time I remember him specifically doing a detective thing was Scene of the Crime from an early Vertigo project,
which was my first
which I loved.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, that was about a kid who it was another one of his. There's a lot of him in these books, of course. Yeah. We know that he had a somewhat troubled childhood, that he was involved in petty crime.
Yep.
And so, Scene of the Crime was a kid who'd had a tough life and but become a private investigator. Was still relatively young and like 20 something, I think. Yeah. Like pretty young for you would think for a PI. And but was super interesting and like had interesting people around him. There was an old I always remember there was an older couple who one who had done like was it crime scene photographs?
Yeah.
And was also kind of like a I think it was like an aficionado of, you know, kind of photography and arts, and there was like this kind of cool older couple that would like help him out sometimes. So it was like he always sort of balances out when he's at his best, at least for me, his kind of darker stuff with kind of very rounded human characters. Yeah.
I agree.
So I will be super interested to see what he does. I would definitely be on board a detective series.
All right, so I'm going to do a weird thing that I don't usually do, which is what? My backup pick is a trade paperback.
What?
And it's not that I didn't like other stuff. I like Donny Cates' Doctor Strange stuff, but it's the last issue, and I want to spotlight this. So Superior Spider-Man, some of the volumes of this, of Dan Slott's Superior Spider-Man, has been out of print for a little while because they're about to do these bigger trades. I love these bigger trades.
Yeah.
So this is a like $40 trade, but
probably it has like what would have been two or three trades in it.
It has
should be the first three.
It has like yeah, it's I think 25 issues worth of comics or something along those lines. It's got the Amazing Spider-Man story called I think Dying Wish,
Previously it did not always get included with Superior Spider-Man.
It wasn't Superior Spider-Man.
It was in one of them, but I think did not have it.
Oh, anyway. I have the hardcover. This may be the version. This may be the hardcover.
The hardcover did not have it, and the soft cover did not.
So I think that this basically is turning the hardcovers into trades.
Yeah. Yep. So this is a perfect time for people to get on board because it has all the cool shit.
There'll be three big trades. Continuing. It's got the Amazing Spider-Man story that kicks off with Doc Ock dying and transferring into Spider-Man's body, and then it kicks off with Doc Ock being Spider-Man.
Right, the storyline that we all thought was a terrible idea,
yep.
And somehow we managed to become super interested over the full, like, two or whatever years it ran.
And it also, it wasn't the first of Dan Slott's run, because he started in the One More Day era and wrote probably a couple years of Spider-Man before he did this.
Yeah.
But this was definitely where I think Dan Slott sort of made his name.
Right, because it could have gone so wrong, yeah. And it actually went very right.
Yep. And so... Yeah, this is the introduction of where Dan Slott is about to wrap up his Spider-Man run in a couple weeks. Or maybe, I guess, about a month, actually, because there's two more issues left. But this is sort of where it all started. Peter Parker did not have a company prior to this storyline. It's how Peter became an actual doctor. It's how he got his company. It's where Anna Marconi came from. It introduces a bunch of villains. It's really, really good stuff.
Well, it was interesting. One of the most interesting things is that Dr. Octopus, of course... He's infused with a bit of Peter Parker's altruism, so he is kind of trying to do good, but he's also got his giant ego, and he wants to be better than Peter Parker ever was. So what you see is like almost a rethink of Spider-Man from somebody who's like, well, what happens when somebody tries to do Spider-Man better, but also maybe doesn't have all the...
Doesn't have his moral grounding.
Right. And yet, he is better at something like...
Which occasionally is a benefit, because Peter Parker right. But like never he could never get
shit.
Alone.
He can never get something done.
Yeah.
He could never, like, join the Avengers. He could never commit to anything because he was always bouncing around between too many projects. But prior... It used to be he couldn't. He dropped out of school before getting his degree.
Yeah.
So Doc Ock goes back. He gets his degree.
Doc Ock does this thing where he builds spider robots. He's like, oh, the robots can handle that.
Yeah.
Like, it's little things like that Peter Parker could never do because of responsibility.
Yeah.
That actually do in some ways make him a superior Spider-Man. But he's also a bad guy and seeing inside his head and how he's doing it. Also, I just want to say, as a collection, beyond the fact that I really like this story, the collection's fantastic. It's got all these variants from Amazing Spider-Man 700, which, like, all these variant covers that are really good. It's got some design sketches. It has, pages upon pages of covers. And then it's got design sketches for some of the new characters. It has letter columns.
Oh, wow.
It's got a... cover gallery of all 699 issues of Amazing Spider-Man.
That's crazy.
And little postage stamp size, actually even smaller postage stamp size, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So this is also like a big celebration of Spider-Man. It's a great trade. It's a great series, and I'm glad to see it sort of getting its due.
I remember there were also lots of the interior artists on a lot of those issues were quite good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Also getting its due, finally, Annihilation Volume 2 comes out this week. This, again, also, I think, is the softcover version of the hardcovers that I think a bunch of us have. This is the Conquest stuff, which is where I think we all fell in love with it. I know, I think Dave was on board before you and I were, Nick, as much. But this was where...
Well, I was following it, I guess, since the Drax series.
Yeah.
But this I do feel like it perfected their what they were wanting to do with this.
Conquest was the second thing. Yeah. This should be the second part of Annihilation, because Annihilation actually ran three volumes.
Actually, you're right. I was going to say, they should not be yet under the old
title. No. This is Ronin and the Annihilation series and the Heralds of Galactus Mini and the Nova Corps.
Yeah, this is the Annihilus the Wave, which is awesome stuff.
It's the development of Ronin as a character. It's really good. And then the Lazarus Sourcebook Collection comes out this week. Greg Rucka, in addition to being sort of a political wonk and a novelist and a comic book writer, is a big ol' RPG geek. And so he does these, like, Marvel Universe style, but super detailed look at his sort of future world of Lazarus. It's got all the families. It is beautifully designed. I am a sucker for that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just really, really good. It's amazing world building, beautiful design, and it will give you a sense of the world of Lazarus in a way that nothing else will.
They're going to make it into a TV show, y'all. Yep. You can find out about all the world building stuff before.
And then I wanted to mention that Doctor Strange Damnation number 4 comes out, although we did get shorted by Diamond, so we will be a little short on that this week. And then Doctor Strange number 389, which is sort of the penultimate issue of Donny Cates' run and does some interesting stuff and is a good read. And then finally, Shadow Man number 2 this week, which is Andy Diggle's second issue of Shadow Man, and it's great action supernatural stuff from Valiant. Dave, anything else on your stack?
Just a few. I wanted to mention there's a new Aliens miniseries called Aliens Dust to Dust, which is about a kid and his mom fleeing a colony after she has been like implanted with an alien egg. But it's sort of a survivalist story.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got two trade paperbacks I want to mention. One I already cheat mentions, which is Sleeper Book 1. This is Ed Brubaker's story set in the Wildstorm universe, about a guy who's undercover basically in the supervillain mob. And it's got all this, the kind of darker elements that you would expect from a guy who's like, to stay undercover, he's had to do some bad things. He's had to like kill innocent people and everything. And the one guy who was like his handler, who was the...
John Lynch,
is like, goes into a coma, I think, early on in this. And he's basically, he is left out in the cold, not sure whether to stay undercover, what to do, you know, how he can try and sort of protect people as best he can.
Yep.
This actually includes the
does it have the Grifter miniseries?
Point blank.
Oh man, that was an awesome series. Had beautiful art.
European artist Colin Wilson.
Yep. Yeah. But anyway, it's a dark but very suspenseful series with some super memorable characters. Like the lead guy is awesome. His friend Genocide is a likably horrible person. Miss Misery is the villainess that he's kind of obsessed with, who like doesn't feel any pain. Is that right? Her thing. Yeah. And there is some weird, dark psychological stuff in this, but it's like highest of recommendations for it. It's also, by the way, I'm going to say occasionally darkly funny. The I think early on the big dude Genocide, that's his buddy.
Yep. I've forgotten all these characters.
Yeah. Do you remember when when they're at like a bar and there's somebody there who's talking about Calvin and Hobbes?
Yeah.
And he was talking about how what a lame the dude the creator Calvin Hobbes was, because he never marketed his stuff, and he's like, you know, oh, he could have made so many millions, and like Genocide like puts his head through the bar. He's like, shut the
up. Well, then there's the game of them telling their origin stories.
Oh man, yeah, that's right. It's like they kind of have this thing where like when like super villains are just sort of hanging around who have powers, they'll be like, hey, you know, like, tell me your origin. You know, and it's like a thing. Like, you reveal your origin story almost the way comics do.
Yeah, and Forgotten Pitbull, the little guy.
There's a ton of great characters in it. Basically, like, if you want, if you like the idea of sort of getting in the headspace of supervillain, kind of the messed up supervillains, not Doctor Doom, big world conquerors, but, like, more like the guys who I would think of would be like the realistic version of Spider-Man villains or Flash villains. This is the story for you.
This was always my favorite Ed Brubaker book. I mean, it has pretty much everything I wanted.
And it's Sean Phillips again, you know, so. And then just on a lighter note, the book Heavy Vinyl, Which is a fun series about an all-girl sort of group of friends and co-workers working at a record store in the late 90s, and then also having adventures as sort of like after work as crime fighters and stuff. It's got some cute girl. What am I going to say? There's sort of a lesbian vibe to with the lead and girl and her girl crush in there, and it's like it's actually very sweet. This is not some naughty comic. It is a nice comic, but oh, and had some of the best art I think I saw in all of 2017. I have to quick look up the artist's name, even though I didn't know the person. Nina Vaqueva. Man, her art kills on that book. And so if you're looking for kind of a cute girl's adventure story, Heavy Vinyl.
Nick. Yeah, I just got a few more ad. Detective Comics 979 sees Batman and his gang fight against the OMAX, which...
Oh, crazy.
And Brother Eye and all that craziness.
I thought those were gone forever.
I thought
but
so
in Detective,
too.
Like, normally I would say, please, no more OMAX. That nearly killed me when it was happening at the time.
True.
But in Detective, which has been so surprisingly good very often, I believe in its powers.
Again, it's sort of like the X-Men Blue for me. They're taking some weird ideas and utilizing sort of the best aspects of them.
Sure, I'm down.
Despicable Deadpool 299, which is the penultimate issue of this series, sees the heroes of the Marvel Universe try to stop Wade Wilson. It's fun, goofy, and it seems like it's heading in the right direction for a good ending.
Okay.
The Silencer number 4 sees... the character run up against Slade Wilson, Deathstroke the Terminator.
Yep, they're big, and Silencer is like a superpowered assassin.
Yeah,
right?
She's a superpowered assassin that's trying to get out of the game, and yet they keep pulling her back in.
Yeah, it's the way things
that's
go.
That's true.
It does.
The third issue of the Terrifics, which is Jeff Lemire's Fantastic Four for the DC Universe, sees them fighting the War Wheel, which is kind of fun. And then... the finale to Avengers No Surrender, the big Avengers story that actually has a pretty good conclusion. I will say, though, Simon Williams should not wear a blazer over his costume. That's just out there.
I'm going to say,
it just looks a
one
little
of
weird.
The worst looks he's ever had.
And what? This is, like, worse than his actual, like, original...
his crazy red and green.
Yeah.
What if, instead of a blazer, he wore a sweet leather bomber jacket like the Avengers did in the 90s?
That would be awesome.
It's the fact that his blazer hangs low, and it looks goofy.
He
looks like he's a slob, not some suave, cool clubbing superhero. Which is what he should be.
Yes.
But there's a great conversation between Bruce and Clint. Just some really good work by Mark Waid and Al Ewing and Jim Zub. This series has been kind of up and down for me, but I've liked where they finally went with it. So
it landed on an up?
Yeah. And just in time for all the Avengers books to be consolidated into one book written by Jason Aaron.
There we go.
So I'm excited for that.
All right. I didn't warn you guys about this, but I have a thought. We're going to see Avengers Infinity War in about 2 days.
Yeah.
I want to speculate with you guys. We can do a spoiler. We're just going to speculate. We don't know anything.
I was going to say, I'm like actively not looking
We don't know anything.
Yeah.
So, but I should give a speculation warning because we're going to talk about what we kind of hope to see, what we maybe want to see. Because we've definitely speculated about what we think might happen, what we think the Marvel phase universe might go, that kind of thing.
I want to preface this.
My speculation is like of the wildest sort. No idea.
Well, I want to preface this a little bit. The premiere did happen last night.
Yes.
Spoilers are out there.
Right.
If you try to spoil something in this store, things will happen to you.
We will murder you.
Yeah. If you ever read the Avengers Mansion Siege comic, there's some bad things that happen to Hercules. Yeah. It's going to be like that for you.
Yeah.
Because
Nick will be the Goliath.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
and I will be Titania.
We just need to make it through 2 more days.
Well, and even after that fact, I mean, we're going to keep the store a spoiler-free zone for a little while.
So don't message us on Facebook or whatever saying, hey, you guys' guesses were all wrong. It's all out there in the fan press.
Yes. We know it's out there.
We'll find you.
We don't want to know.
We don't want to.
We will find you.
But
we'll kill you.
We're going to talk about...
Sure.
This
sounds like fun.
You and I have talked about... We're almost sure this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
But the possibility that They have worked out a deal with Fox.
Yeah.
Possibly in relation to like letting them do the Gifted TV show or whatever.
Right.
To get Silver Surfer so they could do that one scene.
There is the potential for that to happen.
Can you imagine how much the theater will freak out? Marvel fans. So
what's the one scene
in Infinity Gauntlet?
Been a while since I read it.
This is me too, but this is one of the things that sticks with me. There's a scene where Silver Surfer, from light years away, Thanos has the gauntlet. The Silver Surfer takes a run at him from light years away to try and basically come in so fast that he doesn't see it.
Yeah, yeah.
And pull the gauntlet off his hand.
Yeah.
And he comes in, and he misses.
Uh-huh.
And it was such a memorable scene. It's it was set up to be like, oh, they got it, and they did not get it.
So right. I don't know if you can... If that'll work because of sort of the nature of having to introduce Surfer and people
right, you need to know he's a badass before you see him upstaged.
I'm just saying, you could do a thing where Cap or Tony or Star-Lord or one of those guys says, hey, yeah, I have a secret weapon, and we're going to give this a shot because we're losing. And then they do it.
Yeah, I mean, there are ways for it to work and work well, and it would be... pretty damn awesome if they were able to do it.
I believe this to be ridiculous theory.
I think
there's no way.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Well, it's in the same kind of vein of ridiculousness that people are saying that, you know, Reed is going to show up or, you know,
which
be introduced.
That actually makes a little more sense because you would be doing it on some sort of introductory level. And I think the difficult thing with the Surfer scene is mostly that he requires some context, and they do still want this to be an open movie to everybody. They don't want to just assume you know who Silver Surfer is.
But if they name drop Galactus or...
Right, but like, the first time I see Silver Surfer, he needs to kind of be a badass.
This was a badass moment. It is a badass. He misses, but it's a badass moment.
Because he's going up against Thanos.
Yeah. I don't know. I could see it. I don't think they'll do it. I don't think it's going to happen.
But that's your, like, that's your long odds bet. You want the credit if it happens.
Because that... is one of those moments. One of the things that they do in these movies, even though they bear little resemblance to the actual comics in terms of like story plot, but they get those moments in there that are the key moments.
We already know that they're at least getting the Thanos cap face off, which is a big thing.
We got to see that, and that's cool.
Do you want to know what my long shot is?
What's that? Is it a long shot?
No, not long shot. That would be a little weird.
D-Man
would be cool, but Nova. You know, Thanos has got to get the stone from Xandar, so... I would love to see Nova somehow, like, he wipes out Xandar. Nova's the last Xandarian Nova Corps member, and he's got the world mind. Yeah. That would be my long shot. I don't think it's going to happen, but I want it to.
So I don't think that's wildly far-fetched. They've talked about wanting to do a Champions thing. There was just something the other day, and I don't know if this was speculation or not, but I thought they said that one of the Marvel guys... said that a Moon Knight and
Nova
had some possibilities in their near future.
Yeah,
and so here's what I'm going to guess. First of all, I feel like it's possible that the Nova that they would go with, who's the younger kid, Sam. Because that then allows them to do the Champions and have a whole new superhero team, a teen superhero team, which really hasn't been done, for the weird New Mutants movie that'll maybe or maybe not come out.
As much as I like Richard Rider, if we get a teen Champions movie out of it, I'm fine with it.
So imagine if they used Richard Rider in this as a guy who's the last stand of the Nova Corps, and then he gets killed.
Yeah.
And then so it's somewhat meaningful when... No, they wouldn't do it. We already know that. They don't do that. They don't really...
It's true.
That's not been a pitfall for them.
Yeah.
I can't think of a single guy who I feel like has been, like, punked out.
So, related to that, we know a lot of people are in this. We don't know for sure that Hawkeye's in it, although the Russo's have said that Hawkeye's in it.
Yeah, from what I understand, Hawkeye is in it.
There's someone else who I feel like is a notable character who's not shown up on the posters. Well, for one thing... Do we think Nick Fury's going to figure into this at all? Or is this too big for Nick Fury?
I don't know.
Well, it should be there. It should be nothing too big for Nick Fury. To me, it'd be almost weird if he didn't.
I feel like...
But we haven't seen any indications.
Well, if depending on how Thanos is executing his plans, like, I don't know, maybe one of those things where it's like, I don't think S.H.I.E.L.D. has the best cosmic knowledge.
Right.
So if something cosmic is coming to Earth, they may not know, and the Avengers may be very reactive in this, in which case S.H.I.E.L.D. may be so far behind the curve that even with their super cool intel, they just don't know what's going on.
I feel like we'll see everybody. And I feel like whether that'll be for a scene or a throwaway line, like Cap's been working with Nick during whatever time
as part of the
Secret Avengers type thing.
Do you think
I can easily see that?
Do you think they'll use the phrase Secret Avengers at any point?
I don't know.
Or is
know.
That just what the fans are calling?
I think that's probably just what fans are calling. Yeah. But it would be kind of cool
it'd
if they did.
Cool. It'd be a cool nod.
Secret Avengers is a slightly silly name.
It's a slightly silly name, but
it actually... It actually fits.
Yeah.
Because on this, Cap's team is supposed to be operating under the radar. Because
they're all wanted.
So that it would make sense. I am also curious, one of the big questions, of course, is where or what is the Soul Stone?
Yeah.
And the obvious thing is that it's under Wakanda. That it is the meteor.
You've tried to sell me on this, and I'm you make a good argument.
It's the obvious thing. It's that their ancestors speak to them. That's souls being taken to the Soul Stone.
No?
It gives power to the herbs. It creates vibranium. Like, it feels like a big, massive Infinity Stone style object. It is so obvious that I'm sure it's not it. I think it's a red herring.
Yeah.
Why would they not? Why would they do that though? Is it because I mean, first of all, the Black Panther was so popular, but they couldn't have known that was going to happen. But it'll be awesome to have Black Panther and Wakanda in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But do you think there's going to be like some surprise location, like they're going to go into space? It's going to be on Xandar or something like that, and we will get some big. Because like on the ads, I have not seen much space stuff. And when I think of Thanos, I think you've got to see planets and space stations and all
we
kinds
seen
of outer
a lot.
Space
We've,
stuff.
They've been focusing on certain things.
I just thinking that might be the sort of like more in the second half of it. But the Guardians are in the mix.
But just remember, we've seen what 5-10 minutes of a 2-hour movie?
Two hour and 40 minute movie?
Yeah.
We haven't seen... It feels like they've shown us a lot, but we haven't seen that much
I feel
yet.
Like they've been really good with what they've
what
shown.
What we've seen is a handful of, like, 2.5 minute trailers. So it feels like they've told us a lot, but these could all be red herring stuff.
Yeah?
Right. If it is just, if the vibranium stuff is the, like, if the meteor is the Soul Stone, will you be disappointed?
No, I'm totally good with that. I think it's a great idea. I don't think that's
what else? What are the other stones
then? I don't want everything from the Marvel Cinematic Universe to be tied into the Infinity Stones.
Well,
so, that personally for me was...
It would be a weird coincidence that all these heroes have, over the course of a few years of being in existence, in one way, shape, or form, encountered all the Infinity Stones just through randomness. But they've encountered, what, at least, what, 5 of the 6?
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of them.
Thor's encountered 2 of them. The Guardians encountered 1.
Cap has encountered 1.
Cap encountered 1. And then the Avengers.
Well, says, and then the Vision.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah. So, we've had the first thing was, what's it called? Not the Obelisk. The Cosmic Cube.
The Tesseract.
The Tesseract, we first saw in World War II. Then it showed up again in Avengers.
Yep.
And then it showed up again in Age of Ultron. Or no. The Scepter showed up in Ultron.
The Tesseract got put back into Odin, which eventually gets Odin's to Loki, and Loki gets to...
Right. Loki is probably where it gets to Thanos at the tail end of Ragnarok.
Yeah. I forget, because I haven't watched all of these movies in a while, what's the explanation for why are they not stones?
I think they're all in cases. They're all in some kind of case.
Yeah, everything is like their shell, because even in like the Guardians of the Galaxy with their... Their stone was in, like, a shell, and then the stone was in the center of it.
Yeah.
It's like a, kind of like, you know, a Tootsie Pop.
It's a creamy center.
Yeah. It's kind
Except
of
instead of creamy, it's a stone.
And it can kill you.
Kill everybody in the universe.
And kill everybody in the universe. Yeah, I feel like we're going to see a lot of Thanos gathering the stones in this. I think the gauntlet won't even show up till the end of this movie.
That's possible.
And he'll snap his fingers.
I do think that we're likely to see that. Again, though... We're all guessing at it, and the Russos are better than that. Like, they're not... It's not like they don't
it's
deliver
not gonna,
what they want.
They would not end it with that.
You don't think so?
No. I think it would be more dramatic to... I think, first of all, you're going to have to see those results for people to care about it.
Yeah.
You're going to have to see what it does, exactly. Even if he's told you, when I snap my fingers, half the universe goes.
I don't know. I could see it working.
Maybe.
Plus, there's going to be a post-credits.
Yeah, that's
true. You know there'll be post-credits where they can follow up and do an epilogue-type thing.
Right.
And then they can introduce whoever's going to be the person to take on Thanos, because we're sure people are going to die.
Yes.
I feel like it might be best, though, even pre-credits, to have some sequences that show, like, the aftermath, like, of this, like, you know, like, world, like, universe-shattering event. I would show, like, the aftermath of it, like, 5 to 10 minutes of kind of, like... Like horrific, sort of like, you know, planes falling out of the sky, families divided, and all this horrible stuff. And then I would use the post-credit sequence to sort of do the hey, we might still have a shot at this. We've got a secret weapon. It's right. Adam Warlock. It's whatever.
Right.
We'll
see. I think Empire Strikes Back has got
to
be
my long yeah. shot, by the way, is to... And Empire Strikes Back did have an epilogue.
It did.
Is to say that even though he's not credited in it, Adam Warlock will have some role in this.
That'd be interesting. I can see it, but they've sort of said
But he would be... I feel like it'd be post-credits.
Yeah. Well, and yeah. he's not in it until after Guardians... I mean, he's in Guardians 3. That's where he's being created.
That doesn't
created.
Mean he couldn't be in a post-credit sequence. I think it's unlikely, but it's no more unlikely. Certainly not as more unlikely than my Silver Surfer thing.
That's true.
So, what do you guys think about the deaths? Are you trying not to think too much about it? Do you not want to?
I mostly didn't want to think about
yeah.
it. You know, like when I went to see Force Awakens.
Yeah.
I had already kind of like pushed it out of my head to like stop thinking about it for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And somebody said, like, you know, well, the fans are, they kind of blabbed and said, like, people are already talking about, like, which character it is dies. And I was like, oh, I kind of didn't want to
know
that.
Dies,
and
yeah.
then he's like, well, you know, it's the first one in years. You knew they had to, like, kill off somebody. And
no,
I was like,
don't.
Not really.
They don't. And here's the thing. Everybody's assuming they're going to kill people off in Infinity War because Thanos is such a badass and he's such a, you know, an Infinity Gauntlet. He kills all these characters. I don't necessarily think we are. I think they may be setting us up for it.
Yeah,
and they
I
love
mean,
playing
possible.
With the fans. They love saying, oh, yeah, we're going to kill a bunch of people. Everybody's going to cry.
I think you can't promise that and not deliver, though.
I
do
can.
Actually... I think that is going to happen.
We'll see.
Because the reality-shaping nature of the gauntlet means that it doesn't have to stay forever. I do think they'll get the best drama if some of it is permanent. So, although I haven't thought about it a lot... we know that a lot of the big characters, so the ones probably the most rumored ones being like Cap and Iron Man,
yeah,
they have, in the comics and in the movies, obvious replacements if they were to do that.
True.
Iron Man has Rhodey, and
yeah.
if they wanted to introduce Riri Williams, they
yeah.
could.
Cap has Sam.
And Winter Soldier.
And Winter Soldier. He is like ready to go.
Yeah.
And it would make his sort of final confrontation pretty meaningful.
Yeah.
We know that there's going to be at least a confrontation between them. But I do expect them to turn some of those things on their ear a little bit
maybe
and surprise us.
Yeah.
Well, the Russo brothers are so good at that, and they're good at.
Have we seen Ant-Man turn Giant Man in this?
In the trailer.
I guess we did at least see that. We saw that like in the trailers for the new Ant-Man.
So here's what I'd really love.
Yeah.
I don't think this is very likely either, but. We haven't seen that much of Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And you remember the pre-Kree Skrull War, around that time, when Avengers went to space?
He became
Goliath.
Yeah.
If they did a thing where Hawkeye is like, I need something besides my bow, and he became Goliath for this...
Oh, man.
That'd be amazing.
Well, like, imagine, like, you could have, like, Thanos, his like, agents or whatever, what are they called?
The Black Order.
The Black Order.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have spaceships and stuff, too. Do they
yeah.
have spaceships?
I think
yeah,
so.
Probably.
But, like, Goliath back in the day, like, I remember him, like, physically pounding on a spaceship type
yeah.
thing that was, like, a Kree ship. Imagine him, like, with arrows the size of him, like, taking down whole spaceships.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be ridiculous,
yeah.
but like one of those things where like I would probably go through the roof if it happened.
It'd be a great nod.
What if Hawkeye is the leader of the secondary Avengers squad that will take up after...
Or maybe so, yeah.
Because,
I mean,
if he did that and they transferred out into West Coast Avengers...
Oh, man.
Randy, you will say expletives in the theater if that happens.
It makes perfect sense because, I mean, in the comics he was sort of the lead. He can be a leader. He does... take people under his wing.
Well, and we know that they like to do the Bendis stuff, so they want to do the Ronin thing.
But if they do that...
The only way...
And if
because
they like, they bring in some young heroes and
yeah.
things
well,
like that...
what I was going to say is, in the movies, he's very much a family man.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
somebody were to snap their fingers and he were to lose his family, though...
Yeah, yeah, then he would come back, yeah.
Then he would come back.
And what if he brings in, like, Kamala Khan and some of those people who,
oh,
like,
man.
Who are like, he's like, I need to recruit some kids.
And
yeah.
that, and
so
then they're like,
people who weren't
and they're like,
the
here's
fight.
A spinoff. We're doing we're champions. They
yeah.
just don't want to say it. Just
yeah, you know what would be kind of interesting is if like just to kind of like show what's kind of going on around the Marvel Universe. If they showed this kind of group of kids who are sort of hanging out and kind of
yeah.
using their powers a little bit, and then it's like when things are so dire, I can't imagine anybody saying I want to bring some kids into this because
yeah.
that's you know they had to struggle even just to kind of explain that with Spider-Man.
But if you had to,
and they're like, well, you kids already like I saw you stop the Absorbing Man or some of the villain that
they
show in an introductory thing. It's like
yeah.
that.
You could have Vision toying with the notion of a family and having created Viv.
Yeah.
This is
that's pretty out there too.
That is out there.
You heard it here first. Avengers 4, West Coast Avengers.
Yeah, and a Champions spinoff coming in Phase 4.
Here's what I love about Marvel Cinematic, among the many other things that I love about Marvel Cinematic.
That these things are possible.
That it's possible that, remember Civil War? Like, we didn't know, unless you happened down the Lego aisle at the wrong time, you didn't know that Giant Man was coming.
Right. It's true.
And I remember how you could see it coming, like, in the seconds before when he's talking about a thing, and, like, I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And I know there's going to be at least a
moment. I try not to talk out loud in movies, yeah, but that's one of those cases where I had to.
There's going to be at least one moment like that in here. Probably more than that.
Yeah.
So, well, who knows what's coming.
This is the longest Marvel movie that there's been.
Yeah.
This is almost
Black Panther?
Yeah. 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 So, the Black Panther was
the Russo brothers. They've only done two right now, right? Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Yeah, Winter Soldier and Civil War.
And then this is like four,
arguably the best.
Right. I have a feeling that I am a little concerned about pacing issues.
I am too, and the sheer number of characters.
Right. At the hour and 45 minute mark, people are going to start to be feeling ready to go home, and they're going to have to like somehow mentally get them on board for 45 more minutes. So there has to be kind of some big things that happen near the end.
Maybe. I have a feeling we're not even going to notice the time.
Yeah, yeah. I have definitely experienced that with movies recently.
I mean, I know I'm spending 6 hours in a movie theater over the next 2 days because I'm seeing this again on Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, I am as excited for this as anything else. Like, I was excited for Black Panther. This is another level.
Well, this is 18 movies in the making.
Yeah, this is the culmination of a thing that you and I, Nick, I think in particular, we watch these movies over and over again.
I can't even count how many times I've seen Avengers or Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
I think it's for Avengers, it's coming up into the 60s.
Let me just throw this out and bring the room down.
Yeah.
What if they screw it up?
Not going to happen. I have no concerns about that. I mean, there's been a couple of Marvel movies where I went in and was like, I came out of Doctor Strange a little disappointed.
Right.
And I came out of Thor Ragnarok a little disappointed.
Yep.
But in general, and even those, like, I like both of those movies. They just weren't exactly what I wanted. The Russos have never failed to deliver exactly what I want.
I think the worst thing that could happen for them would only be this. It was like a very good movie, but that like it meanders a little bit. They just had so many characters.
Right.
It loses momentum here and there.
I don't think we'll notice any of that till later because they do. Like, Civil War has kind of a weak third act.
Yeah.
I still really love it, but it does have kind of a weak third act. But I think because it's carried along by those two strong first two acts, you don't notice it until you start really thinking about it later. I feel like Avengers Infinity War will be in the same place. Like, maybe there'll be some issues with pacing in the middle or with a third act that doesn't quite deliver, but we're not going to notice as long as it delivers what we want up front.
D-Man. If Demolition Man does not emerge by the end of this, then I don't even know what I was there for.
So you want Silver Surfer, I want Nova, and Dave, who are you?
Well, you know, I've decided my actual long shot. The Adam Warlock thing does seem a little unlikely to me based on just, like, core information that we know about these movies.
Yeah.
So my crazy out there thing will be that sort of the champions will get the stage set for them.
He's so awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway. Or West Coast Avengers.
Yeah. Well, you guys, we will know the truth next week. We will report in with our spoiler review.
Yep.
And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.